It's time to fire it up.
It's 122,000 BTUs of char broiling power.
To the drinks.
Drink some beers.
These guys have you covered.
We're just kicking back out here, just having a barbecue.
This is the Grillin' Guys.
Welcome. You listen to the Grillin' Guys on the Grillin' Guys Talk Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad you're here with us today. Hope you're staying warm out there. We've had a little brisk bolt of cold that came through here at the end of the week, but you know what? My grill still fires up, and I'm still cooking. So I'm Jop. He's Barbecue Bob. What is cooking, baby?
Hey, what is cooking, or what was cooking? If you look at the Grillin' Guys Facebook page, you'll notice a live post I did Monday night. I cooked for Impact Church Monday, and we fed 450 guys thanks to Sobey Meats, who gave us a great deal on standing ribs. So we did, like we do every year, the ribeyes. And I had an army of people to help. And before I even got there, your buddy Mark was already cracking the whip, and they had, you know, the meat half prepared or at least seasoned, and I was just like floating around most of the time.
So well, that's obviously, if you had time to take videos while everybody else was working, I saw those videos. Actually, it was good. We should talk about that a little bit, because these are whole rib roasts, right? I mean, you got seven bones in these things.
Yep.
They're 25 pounds piece,
probably.
Yeah, and I saw a table full of them. I think I counted up to 20, and then I couldn't tell if there were more beyond that or not.
Yeah, I think they averaged around 22, and we cooked 24 of them.
Okay.
So I hooked up Impact with a big American Barbecue Systems judge, five-footer like my old one.
Right.
And that actually took all the – so I drug your smoker down there.
Right.
I didn't even need it. I had to take it home.
Well, yep.
It was and I made an executive decision to save Tim a little time and to get the meat a little cheaper, and I didn't have them separate the ribs and then truss them.
Okay. So they were ribs full loins, yep, with the ribs in them,
yep,
and then not separated, not right, trussed, just
and I think next time I'd just let them truss them, separate them and truss them again, because we had four volunteer carvers and it's a chore. But if you can take it off the ribs, it goes much easier.
Right. Well, when you're cooking a whole rib roast like that with the bones on it, your tendency is to go between the bones with the slices.
You couldn't do that.
Right. Because you're going to end up with a 2.5-pound steak.
Right.
So the remedy to that is cut the bones off first. Right. And then you've got a roast there, and you can cut your steaks in any dimension that you want after
right,
that. Right. But
right,
it's hard to cut down into a bone and then get it away from the bone without just taking them off first.
Of course,
right?
A couple of the chefs got 2-pounders.
Right.
And one of them I know took his home and shared it with his wife.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And she was happy.
Exactly.
That's
yep.
Rumor.
I mean, it's a big piece of meat. but anyway, you've done this before. So they put these things in a smoker. Right, and this judge that you're talking about, for those of you that don't know, it's a rotisserie inside of a smoker,
and it's on an axle with mag tires.
Right,
it's a bad boy.
It's a big unit, and but it's got, I think, 16, if I remember, racks in there that each would hold two of those roasts. So you could have got more in there probably than you did. Or
we only used two racks on each arm.
Oh, okay, yep.
So
yep,
there's six arms, and that gave us 12.
Right. So you could get the 24 roasts in there, just right. But this thing, it's an offset firebox. For those of you that don't know what that means, is that you're not cooking over the fire, you're cooking beside the fire.
Yep.
And the meat rotates around in a circle like a carousel inside of a smoking chamber, and it goes by the heat, and it's in the chamber, which functions like an oven, but it gets really hot by when it goes by that heat source, and that puts a really nice sear.
And that
those
heat comes off with a damper and goes up to the top of it, and it's got the perfect arc, so the heat tends to foil around it.
Right.
And it cooks very evenly. But while I was there, it's the word's gotten out that I once told Tim Sobey, as you know very well, this is an inside joke, but Tim gave me a taste of his jerky once, and I said, man, that's almost as good as mine.
Yeah.
And he looked at me like I slapped him. So when Dan went in there to pick up the meat the day before, Daniel Boone,
right,
Tim had to relate that story and give him a bag of jerky and show him how good his jerky was. So while you'll see it, if you see the video, you'll see while I'm live streaming, Daniel comes up to me with a piece of jerky and he wants me to taste it.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, that's good stuff.
It's
really
funny.
Good stuff.
But I have a a confession and a bonehead story with a happy ending. You know, I bought this new Jeep and put some bigger rims and tires, and I ended up at this place called, it's right in Ada. It's an awesome Jeep shack. It's called Gas Pedal Customs.
Okay.
If you have a Jeep and you want to trick it out, you have to visit this place. You will spend money.
Yeah.
You can't walk out of there without something, because these guys are real Jeep guys.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm heading to an interview. I'm trying to find work because the airline industry is just killing us. So I'm trying to get supplemental work, or maybe I'll just have to bail out of selling jets. But either way, I'm rushing to an interview. And I'm coming through Ada, and I feel a little vibration in the Jeep. And I pulled over, and one of my lug nuts was loose.
Oh.
I said, that's what's going on here. So I whipped into Gas Pedal Customs. The kid comes out with his digital, you know, $400 torque wrench.
Yeah.
And he found the one that I showed him, and that one was not torqued. And he had me tightened up and torqued down in about 3 minutes.
Yep.
And I made the interview.
Good. Good for you.
But I've heard of people doing this before, and I always think, how could you do that? Well, I understand how you do it. In this case, I was working in tight spaces because we had three vehicles in the garage, and you know,
you didn't want to work outside in 0 degree weather?
No, I was moving all those tires around and jacking it up, and I had to get these spacer plates for the front, and it was more of a task than I was hoping.
Yep.
Anyway, Gas Pedal Customs also had the perfect spacer plate. I mean, custom milled aluminum, American made deal, instead of the Chinese junk that the auto parts stores were all trying to sell me.
Yeah,
because those did not work.
Right. These did.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, man, it's so nice to have a little problem like that solved, but your tires are really important when you're rolling down the road.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're speeding.
Big part of safety. Big part of safety. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you. Speaking of not grilling outside, Conrad, we talked about this a little bit before the show started. The wind was blowing and the wind chill was below zero. And I did. I put my meat in a cast iron skillet and put it in a 400-degree oven.
The true confessions come.
Right there.
See how we are?
But here's the deal, though. It was a scraped-together recipe, but I want to share it because it was super damn good. And what I did is I had thick-cut pork loin chops, not with a bone in them, but the loin, right? And they were maybe a half-inch thick. I took a really sharp knife, and I cut a slit in them and made a pocket, right? And my wife had spinach dip, like you'd put on pita crackers or whatever.
Oh, you made pork pockets.
Right, I did. I opened that pork up, and I put that spinach in there, but then I was worried about it coming out when it got warm.
Yeah.
So I took two strips of bacon, and I wrapped it around the pork chop to kind of like seal in the slit that
Well, let
I
me
made.
Ask you a question. Did you put a bunch of bacon grease in the pan before you
No,
did?
No, I did not. I did not, but it made some.
Because right? You missed an opportunity right. for some fat.
Right. But so I wrapped bacon around it and then just put it in a 375 oven for about 40 minutes. And the as we do with bacon, it seals stuff up, right? And the bacon, when it
shrunk,
cauterized
nice.
It and shrunk it up. And man, that was a good flavor combination. And I used some of Sobey's Tim's blend on the thing for the season.
You didn't bring a couple in for me and Conrad chance,
I know.
Did you?
Ooh, man. Whoa. But that was just a, what can I make out of these boring pork chops?
Yeah.
Right?
And you're right.
And that's what I came up with.
They
and
can get boring.
It was damn good, man.
Was it just the boneless loin?
Yeah, that's all it was. Because that stuff
so
gets
you
dry.
Cut them thick.
Right. And then
And butterflied them.
Well, I didn't even.
Actually made a pocket.
I made a pocket, yeah. I went in, left about a half inch all the way around the perimeter except one side and just opened it up.
So how
bit.
Did you temp them?
What?
How'd you temp
I just looked to see when the bacon was done, honestly. I mean, I could have stuck a thermometer in there, but they were in the 375 oven for about 45 minutes. I knew the pork
about
was
perfect.
Done.
Perfect, yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was done.
And how about the pork chops themselves? Did they dry out at all? Or
no, not with that bacon on there and the spinach.
Filling inside.
And the filling inside.
Nice.
It was wonderful. Yeah, it's like she's got to, you know, it isn't often she says, I'd eat that again. You got to make that again.
So
like,
I think she says that all the time. I know how you cook.
But anyway.
Jop likes to Jop likes to fancy up his wife a little bit,
yeah.
And he spoils her.
Right. So coming up next, speaking of fancying up, we're going to be talking with Brian Lesperance at Fen Valley Winery. Tis the season for a big red wine or maybe a glass of port and a cigar. So stick with us. We will be back.
Hey guys, Schmoes now has two locations, 2600 Patterson here in Grand Rapids and 109 West Mitchell in Petoskey now. So when you're up north, you can grab some Schmoes as well. Remember, you can get all your favorites, Bone Crusher, Hop Knocker, Treasure Chest, Amber Tees, Michigan Hands Pale Ale, and India Pale Ale, or one of our great root beers. Once again, that's Grand Rapids and Petoskey, engineering better Michigan beer.
Hi, this is Tim Sobey. Sobey Meats is an 11-year-old business on Remembrance Drive in Walker. We have high-quality custom meats as well as seafood, produce, beer, and wine. Sobey Meats is proud to supply the barbecue enthusiasts with over 50 sauces, Kansas City and Memphis rubs, as well as barbecue supplies. Our meat counter is 60 feet long with 70 different homemade sausages. Check us out at SobeyMeats.com. That's SobeyMeats.com.
Welcome back. You are listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Hey, it's the middle of the winter, but spring is right around the corner. We're going to go with that, right? But before we get to spring, what we're going to do is talk to one of our favorite guys that makes my long nights when I get home. You know, I hate this time of year when it's dark when you go to work and it's dark when you get home.
Yeah.
And I find myself, I just can't sit around and watch TV, you know, but it makes it a little easier if you've got a really nice glass of red wine in your hand. Just kind of seems to make the night go a little better. Isn't that same with you, Bob?
I think white wine works too.
Yeah, right. Well, wine, you're right. But or even a glass of port. We were talking about that, is maybe that and a cigar. So we got a guy on the live line right now named Brian Lesperance. He's the proprietor at Fen Valley Winery, and he knows more about wine than I'll ever know. So we're going to have a little conversation with him. Brian, you out there?
I am.
All right. Hey, thanks for making time for us. I know this is a busy time in the vineyard, right?
Well, in the vineyard, no. In the cellar, yes. So we are we're actually doing wine blends right now. So you guys were talking about, you know, red or white. We did our white wine blending exercise this week, and then we'll do reds in February. That would be blending different varietals in some cases, or something like Meritage, which is a blend of Cabernet Franc and Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot.
Love it.
We'll put those together. Sometimes it's just a blend of different batches of the same wine. For example, our Pinot Grigio comes from a few different fields in Southwest Michigan, and so we'll put those together to make the best Pinot Grigio we can make. So it's kind of a stressful time for the winemakers because you got to make a lot of decisions in a short period of time. But once it's done, it's kind of nice because you kind of know what you got for the year.
You know, Jop and I are huge fans of your Meritage, and especially since you taught me how to say it. I used to call it Meritage. And I just think if you really wanted some free help, we would volunteer to sample your variations. And, you know, you could just bring by the samples one after another.
Yeah, and Bob's opinion is worth what you're paying for it.
Right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, Brian, what is it? What is it that just in layman's terms? So you've got some different varietals there. How do you determine how much of each one to put in it to make a blend? What are you looking for, and what does that result as far as me buying a bottle of it and opening it? You're doing this for me, and what are you trying to accomplish when you blend wines?
Well, there's basically a few different variables, and I won't overcomplicate it, but first is, what do you got? You know, you can't blend what you don't have. So some of it's just logistics. And then usually when you're blending something like Meritage, you're either putting components together to add something or to remove something. So, you know, for example, on a really hot year, the Cabernets can be pretty bold, and that's good. But to keep the same profile of wine with the same kind of relative intensity, those years we might put a little more Merlot in to kind of dial, because it's a little softer grape, to kind of dial it back. In other cases, you know, like for example, you might, like for Pinot Grigio, you might have some fields that have really good aromatics, some have really good finish, and some have, you know, really good fruitiness. And so you might try to pull different components together in different percentages to kind of create a well-balanced wine. That kind of hits you right from that moment you smell the glass to how it finishes, you know, 5-10 seconds later in your palate. So it's a lot of different things that winemakers are kind of working through at that point. But then you're also got to figure that wine changes. You know, wine is constantly evolving as it ages, and so you're also trying to kind of dust off the crystal ball a little bit and think, okay, how's that wine going to be when we get to the peak season where the most people are coming through the tasting room looking to try it before they buy it.
So then the next component of that is the aging process that you talked about. It seems that there is a predisposed rule that you follow for different varietals. And maybe you could explain that a little bit. So if I'm these grapes that you're mixing right now, what is the first time we would see those on your shelves or in your tasting room?
So normally we release our white wines kind of spring, summer of the following year from when they were harvested. So harvest year would be called the vintage date in winemaking terms. Reds are going to be a little bit longer than that in most cases. You know, they're going to go into typically go into white oak barrels for what could be upwards of a year or even 18 months in some cases. So you're usually a whole year behind on those. So like we're getting ready, you know, this year to start releasing some of the reds from 2020 in the spring and summer, but we're already largely through the white wines from that same year.
So you can only use one of those white oak barrels for one time, right?
That's the only way you're going to get flavor and aromatics out of them. But you can definitely use them more than once. You're just going to have to put in basically what we call barrel alternatives, which are little pieces of kind of spare parts, if you will, for making a barrel that the barrel manufacturers will then kind of toast to our specifications, and you can kind of put them into an old barrel and get the same effect, if you will, of a new barrel.
Do you still recycle those chips and sell them to smokers?
Yeah, that's a topic close to your guys' heart there.
Yeah.
We sure do. It's great. I use them all the time, actually.
So last time I saw you, I bought a few bottles of port, and I had one about a week ago, and it was just fantastic. And my son's coming out this weekend, and I have a couple Cubans in the humidor, and I have a heated garage, so we're going to have a couple heaters and a bottle of your port this weekend, and I'm just looking forward to tonight opening a bottle of that. It's wonderful. And if you hear people say that Michigan doesn't produce good red wines, blah, 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 you've got to go on the Southwestern Wine Trail and make sure you start off or finish up at Fenn Valley, because those guys down there, all of those people on that trail are going to make a liar out of those people that say Michigan can't produce good reds.
Right.
There are just so many good reds.
Yeah, I mean, it's so we've been evolving. You know, we it wasn't our specialty for a long time. And so, you know, it takes a long time to build up a reputation. And that's what we're in that process. So it is true that a lot of folks are sort of caught off guard by what we're doing in the red wine space, for sure.
And I get it. I get it. They're not the same as the Napa Valley Reds. I mean, you don't have the heat and the soil and everything to produce that same, let's say, Merlot that they would there, or Cab Sauv.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
It's okay, because they're so good. If you're ready for a slightly different type of red, and who isn't?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Discovery.
Brian, we got just about 30 seconds. Can you tell our listeners what the characteristics are of a port? Because I think a lot of people shy away from that. They don't really know what it is. Maybe help them out.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, so basically port is made by stopping the fermentation early by adding in alcohol, in our case, brandy distilled from Michigan grapes. And what it does is it basically poisons the yeast by increasing the alcohol content such that it can't survive. So it's a that point, you put that in before the fermentation's over, so the sweetness that's left behind is actually from the grape sugar itself, and then typically it'll go into barrels for quite a while, several years in a lot of cases, to age it out and give it that really nuanced, kind of complex but soft flavor and aromatic. So
wow.
it's a great product.
Yeah, nice. You all ought to try it. It's wonderful stuff.
Good winter product.
All right. Well, Brian, thanks so much for making time for us. Stay out of the cold in the vineyard and get down there and blend some wine for us, if you would, please.
All right, I will do my best.
All right.
You guys have a good day.
Take care.
Thanks. That's Brian Lesperance from Fen Valley Winery.
Coming up next, it's springtime in your backyard. Going to be. Stick with us. We'll be back.
The Grillin' Guys are happy to introduce Fen Valley Vineyards. Fen Valley Vineyards is the oldest family-owned winery in Michigan, located in the middle of 45 acres of vineyards carpeting the rolling hills near Lake Michigan. Fen Valley has prided itself in the production of classic European-style wines for the past 22 years. Visit their tasting rooms at the Vineyard Orinsaugatuck, Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Sunday, they're open from 1 to 5. Go to fenvalley.com.
Hi, it's Shasta from Old World Olive Press. We are a Michigan-based company with stores in Rockford, Grand Rapids, Plymouth, and Birmingham. Visit our tasting rooms to sample over 50 varieties of award-winning olive oils and balsamic vinegars, carefully sourced from small-batch artisans in both hemispheres. We have cooking demonstrations and private parties to help you experience the treasures we've discovered. Step into our kitchen, downtown Rockford, in our newest location on Monroe Center, Old World Olive Press. Let us help you bring the magic into your home. Go to Old World Olive Press.
And now, back to the Grillin' Guys show.
With the Grillin' Guys coming at you like a pit bull. We smoke butt, and it's a mittful. Shooting sauce on ribs is what men do. We like meat, and no tofu. With me and Chop, it never gets dull. The grill's so big, it's like a ship's hull. Grillin' Guys, I tell no lies. And do some great things to chicken thighs. When we're at the grill, smoking up a rack, a little taste is just like crack.
Welcome back. You are listening to Grillin' Guys on the Grillin' Guys Talk Network. Hey, I don't know any of you that are in West Michigan here. Last week, the good news is COVID is not shut down the consumer show business like it had the last couple of years. We're seeing these things in the spring. This weekend, I think, is the camper and RV show. But last weekend was the new home and remodeling show in downtown Grand Rapids anyway. And to me, that marks the beginning of spring when the contractors are all down there and they're trying to fill their schedules for the upcoming construction season, which usually starts sometime around the 1st of March and carries through until maybe like Christmas time. And they could take a couple months off and repair equipment and all that other stuff. But to me, what that does is that brings that's the signal for it's time to start planning. Okay. You aren't going to finish your backyard in this time of year, but now is the time to plan for a couple reasons. One is you've got time to do it, you're inside, you're out of the warm weather. But the other one is that you can still get on the contractor schedules if you get your plan put together. If you wait till June or July to say, hey, you know, I wanted to put something new in my backyard, you missed the boat. These guys are busy already. They got their books filled up. So I just want to talk a little bit about this, Bob, because you and I had lots of projects that we've done in our backyard, and they come in all different shapes and sizes,
right,
and they come for all different kinds of budgets. So what I wanted to do is just blow through in the next couple segments, first the planning part, and then maybe some of the equipment that we want to buy in the last segment, because we can talk about why you do that. But so let's have a conversation about, okay, you decided that you want to do a new backyard entertainment area. I think one of the first things you've got to do is come up with a budget.
Well, you know it's the first thing you have to
right.
do because it's all predicated on that.
Yeah, so a budget is just that. It's not an absolute, but it's a range.
Target.
And as you go through this process, you will find things that are important to you that eat up more of that budget than things that are not so important to you.
And it depends on if you're a guy who pays cash, like I think you and I do.
Right.
Or if you're somebody who says, well, we're going to get a home equity loan and we'll just throw the works at it.
Right.
Because then you can do whatever you want. Now you will have to pay for it.
Right, yeah.
And you will go over your budget.
Right. Well, you always do in this. And part of that reason is that things are more expensive when they go outside than when they're inside your house, because they have to be weather resistant or weatherproof, depending on what you're using. And those materials traditionally are more expensive than one you'd put under your roof, right? Inside your house, that is. So if you establish your budget, if you've got, I mean, table stakes are $5,000, right? And then you can go up from there. But you don't do a lot of decking. You don't do a lot of planning and especially if you're moving earth and putting plants in and all that other stuff for less than $5,000, then it's just a weekend project. But if you're going to get a contractor in there, you're going to spend that's kind of table stakes, is getting in the game there.
Well, and I've learned the hard way on several things. There are just some things, even though you might be handy, I consider myself pretty handy, but there are some things where it's just so nice to hire.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When it comes to digging holes in the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard work. That's young man's work.
Well, that I don't mind, because I love renting a backhoe and a hydro hoe or something right. like that. But I'm just talking about the actual grading of black dirt, the actual planting of all these various things. I don't. That's not me. I'm
right.
not.
Yep.
I'm not. Saying, oh, we want a bunch of these flowers. No, my wife does that.
Right.
And she'll tell the landscaper what she wants.
That's exactly right. And that's why they have businesses, because they're good at it and they got the proper tools.
Yeah.
And that's another big factor in this whole planning thing, is making sure that you find contractors that are good at what they do, get some references, but let these guys do their work. Don't get in their way. Just write the check and let them do their work.
And they'll have tools you've never seen before.
Right.
Like we have that stoned-in area next to the pool with the fire pit back there.
Right.
And I wanted to make it all black. They brought something in called a dingo.
Yeah.
And was that cool?
Right.
It was just like a little front-end loader that was just a guy standing on a platform, and it's like the size of a riding lawnmower.
Right.
But he's moving dirt with it.
Right.
And very did a beautiful job.
And can get in and out of small yes. places very easy. And do it in 1/10 the time
way
you
better,
would with a wheelbarrow.
Yes, way better than my wheelbarrow.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the components that go into a backyard project. And I'm just going to hit them in no particular order. Electric. Okay. Do you want lights? Do you want to be able to plug in your cell phone? Do you want to be able to use a pellet grill?
And here's an idea,
because
too.
All these things are electric.
Yeah, you definitely. That's a must, and it goes in with a water line or close to the time. And one thing you can do to save a little money is you can buy a spool of UF or UD, whatever you call the underground wire.
Right.
And you can actually trench it out and put your wire where you want to ahead of time and just stub it up on some conduit and then let your electrician come in and work the magic.
That's right.
So that's one way to save some money,
because right.
that's the labor part. And I think working in your backyard, it's a labor of love, and you'll want so much. There will be a point where you'll just have to say, well, we can't afford it, or we have to do it ourselves.
Right. So a lot of times you'll want some lighting, some either aesthetically or functional. Bob and I have grilling areas, and they have light over our grilling areas so we can see what we're doing, because, again, this time of year, you're grilling in the dark.
LED chili lights.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, absolutely. So water, this is one where I shy away from when we're in the Michigan climate, like right now this time of year. You better make sure that stuff got drained out really well, or you're going to have problems in the spring because this stuff freezes. Not that you can't, but I don't use that much water when I'm out in my entertainment area that I can't bring it out in a pitcher.
Well,
I mean, I'm not washing things off in a sink.
But the water lines now are all plastic or
right.
composites.
Right.
And
packs,
you can make a little nipple where you come in out of your basement and put an air fitting on it and put your nice little pancake compressor on it, and you can blow those out in no time at
all. You got to do the drains as well. But both of that, it's not that it can't be done. And that's the other thing is drains. You can't just let your gray water go out on your backyard. You got to connect to a drain somewhere in order to be up to code. People do it. But, again, the water, the drain comes with it. What about gas? Do you want to haul propane tanks, or do you need to change your equipment over to natural gas?
Well, I think I've buried quite a bit of gas.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So that you don't have to. And again, your appliances are either propane or natural gas, and that's based on the feed that you have coming to your house.
And here's a time saver. If you know what you're going to do and you've got things planned out, call Miss Digg.
Yep,
and get her out there, because
her is
one,
a him
she's
usually.
Hot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
No, but it takes them a while to get to your site, so
right.
call it in advance. They'll put the flags down, and then your contractor knows where everything is.
Right,
big deal.
So, what else do you want out there? Do you want a fire pit?
Absolutely.
Do you want to bring propane tanks to that, or you want that hardwired?
There you go.
Okay, TVs. Some people like, if you're doing deluxe outside, you might put a TV under a roof. Well, you got to have some cable, some sort of service to it. Or if you hook a computer up, make a little shelf underneath it. that kind of thing. We talked a little bit about lighting. You're going to have a bar. You want electricity on your bar. Do you want to? What kind of countertops are you going to have on your bar? Is there going to be a roof over your bar? All of those things are all part of the plan, and as you would expect, every time you add one of those things, you're adding dollars and you're adding time, because those things have to be built into the program and then built in that order, which makes it all come together.
You know, the one thing I've avoided, I've got three or four different outdoor areas, and the one thing I've always avoided out of sanctity is TVs.
Yep.
I just don't want them around.
Right. Some people do. Some people don't. I get it. And that's the cool part about doing this. The other thing, which is I think is a big and expensive decision, is what are you doing? I call it flooring, but what are you going to walk on?
Right.
Okay, are you going to do flagstone? Are you going to do block? Are you going to do bricks?
Yeah.
Are you going to just do grass?
Well,
what's out there?
A little word to the wise. Stay away from flagstone.
Yeah?
Because it'll never be right.
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of it.
Right.
And I want stamped concrete next
right.
time.
Yep. And that's an option too. So there's a lot of things to consider when you're putting a plan together. In the next segment, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about some of the types of equipment that you might want in your outdoor entertainment area. So you listen to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back. This is Jop from the Grilling Guys, and I want to talk to you about Garrett's Appliances, which is your one-stop shop for all your barbecue supplies, tools, grills, and smokers in West Michigan. Garrett's has grills for your outdoor kitchen. In fact, we at Home Life Outdoor Kitchens use them exclusively as our supplier for the very best equipment available. That's GarrettsAppliances.com, GarrettsAppliances.com.
Satisfaction's been our name since 59. Been at the top of our game. We stand behind our name. We live it, we love it. Allen Bob Sports, sportsmen serving sportsmen.
It's time to fire it up.
It's 122,000 BTUs of char broiling power.
To the drinks.
Drink some beers.
These guys have you covered.
We're just kicking back out here. Just having a barbecue.
This is the Grilling Guys.
Welcome. You listen to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad you're here with us today. Hope you're staying warm out there. We've had a little brisk bolt of cold that came through here at the end of the week, but... you know what? My grill still fires up, and I'm still cooking. So I'm Jop. He's Barbecue Bob. What is cooking, baby?
Hey, what is cooking or what was cooking? If you look at the Grilling Guys Facebook page, you'll notice a live post I did Monday night. I cooked for Impact Church Monday, and we fed 450 guys thanks to Sobey Meats, who gave us a great deal on standing ribs. So we did, like we do every year, the ribeyes. And I had an army of people to help. And before I even got there, your buddy Mark was already cracking the whip, and they had, you know, the meat half prepared or at least seasoned. And I was just like floating around most of the time.
Well,
so that's
obviously,
why
if you
stream.
Had time to take videos while everybody else was working, I saw those videos. Actually, it was good. We should talk about that a little bit. Because these are whole rib roasts, right? I mean, you got seven bones in these things.
Yep.
They're 25 pounds piece?
Probably.
Yeah, and I saw a table full of them. I think I counted up to 20, and then I couldn't tell if there were more beyond that or not.
Yeah, I think they averaged around 22, and we cooked 24 of them.
Okay.
So I hooked up Impact with a big American Barbecue Systems judge, 5-footer like my old one.
Right.
And that actually took all the... So I drug your smoker down there.
Right.
I didn't even need it. I had
okay.
to take it home.
Well, yep.
But it was... And I made an executive decision to save Tim a little time and to get the meat a little cheaper. And I didn't have them separate the ribs and then truss them.
Okay. So they were ribs, full loins,
yep,
with the ribs in them,
yep,
and then not separated, not
right,
trussed, just.
And I think next time I'd just let them truss them, separate them, and truss them again, because we had four volunteer carvers, and it's a chore. But if you can take it off the ribs, it goes much easier.
Right. Well, when you're cooking a whole rib roast like that with the bones on it, your tendency is to go between the bones with the slices.
You couldn't do that.
Right, because you're going to end up with a 2.5-pound steak.
Right.
So the remedy to that is cut the bones off first, right? And then you've got a roast there, and you can cut your steaks in any dimension that you want after that, right? But it's hard to cut down into a bone and then get it away from the bone without just taking them off first.
Of course, a couple of the chefs got 2-pounders.
Right.
And one of them I know took his home and shared it with his wife.
Well, yeah.
And she was happy.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, it's a big piece of meat. but anyway, you've done this before. So they put these things in a smoker, right? And this judge that you're talking about, for those of you that don't know, it's a rotisserie inside of a smoker.
And it's on an axle with mag tires.
Right.
It's a bad boy.
It's a big unit. But it's got, I think, 16, if I remember, racks in there that each would hold 2 of those roasts. So you could have got more in there probably than you did.
Well, we only used 2 racks on each arm.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So
yep.
There's 6 arms, and that gave us 12.
Right. So you could get the 24 roasts in there right. But this thing, it's an offset firebox. For those of you that don't know what that means, is that you're not cooking over the fire, you're cooking beside the fire.
Yep.
And the meat rotates around in a circle like a carousel inside of a smoking chamber. And it goes by the heat, and it's in the chamber, which functions like an oven, but it gets really hot by when it goes by that heat source, and that puts a really nice sear.
And that
those.
Heat comes off with a damper and goes up to the top of it, and it's got the perfect arc, so the heat tends to foil around it.
Right.
And it cooks very evenly. But while I was there, it's the word's gotten out that I once told Tim Sobey, as you know very well, this is an inside joke, but Tim gave me a taste of his jerky once, and I said, man, that's almost as good as mine.
Yeah.
And he looked at me like I slapped him. So when Dan went in there to pick up the meat the day before, Daniel Boone, Tim had to relate that story and give him a bag of jerky and show him how good his jerky was. So while you'll see it, if you see the video, you'll see while I'm live streaming, Daniel comes up to me with a piece of jerky and he wants me to taste it.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
It's
that's really
funny.
Good stuff.
But I have a confession and a bonehead story with a happy ending. I bought this new Jeep and put some bigger rims and tires, and I ended up at this place called, it's right in Ada. It's an awesome Jeep shack. It's called Gas Pedal Customs.
Okay.
If you have a Jeep and you want to trick it out, you have to visit this place. You will spend money.
Yeah.
You can't walk out of there without something, because these guys are real Jeep guys.
Yep.
Anyway, so I'm heading to an interview. I'm trying to find work because the airline industry is just killing us. So I'm trying to get supplemental work, or maybe I'll just have to bail out of selling jets. But either way, I'm rushing to an interview. And I'm coming through Ada, and I feel a little vibration in the Jeep. And I pulled over, and one of my lug nuts was loose.
Oh.
I said, that's what's going on here. So I whipped into Gas Pedal Customs. The kid comes out with his digital, $400 torque wrench.
Yeah.
And he found the one that I showed him, and that one was not torqued. And he had me tightened up and torqued down in about 3 minutes.
Yep.
And I made the interview.
Good. Good for you.
But I've heard of people doing this before, and I always think, how could you do that? Well, I understand how you do it. In this case, I was working in tight spaces because we had 3 vehicles in the garage, and
You didn't want to work outside in zero degree weather?
No, I was moving all those tires around and jacking it up, and I had to get these spacer plates for the front, and it was more of a task than I was hoping.
Yep.
Anyway, Gas Pedal Customs also had the perfect spacer plate. I mean, custom milled aluminum, American made deal, instead of the Chinese junk that the auto parts stores were all trying to sell me.
Yeah.
Because those did not work.
Right. These did.
Did. So it's just, man, it's so nice to have a little problem like that solved, but your tires are really important when you're rolling down the road.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You're speeding.
Big part of safety. Big part of safety. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you. Speaking of not grilling outside, Conrad, we talked about this a little bit before the show started. The wind was blowing and the wind chill was below zero, and I put my meat in a cast iron skillet and put it in a 400-degree oven.
The true confessions come.
Right there.
See how we are?
But Here's the deal, though. It was a scraped together recipe, but I want to share it because it was super damn good. And what I did is I had thick cut pork loin chops, not with a bone in them, but the loin, right? And they were maybe a half inch thick. I took a really sharp knife and I cut a slit in them and made a pocket, right? And my wife had spinach dip, like you'd put on pita crackers or whatever.
Oh, you made pork pockets.
Right, I did. I opened that pork up and I put that spinach in there, but then I was worried about it coming out when it got warm.
Yeah.
So I took two strips of bacon and I wrapped it around the pork chop to kind of like seal in the slit that
I made.
Well,
let me ask you a question. Did you put a bunch of bacon grease in the pan before you
No, I did not. I did not, but it made some.
Because right? You missed an opportunity for some fat.
Right. But so I wrapped bacon around it and then just put it in a 375 oven for about 40 minutes. And as we do with bacon, it seals stuff up, right? And the bacon, when it
shrunk cauterized
nice. It and shrunk it up. And man, that was a good flavor combination. And I used some of Sobey's Tim's blend on the thing for
the
seasoning.
You didn't bring a couple in for me and Conrad chance,
I know.
Did you?
Ooh, man. Whoa. But that was just a, what can I make out of these boring pork chops?
Yeah.
Right? And
you're
then,
right.
And that's what I came up with.
They
and
can get boring.
It was damn good, man.
Was it just the boneless loin?
Yeah, that's all it was. Because that stuff
so
gets
you
dry.
Cut them thick.
Right. And then slits.
And butterflied them.
Well, I didn't even.
Actually made a pocket.
I made a pocket. Yeah, I went in, left about a half inch all the way around the perimeter except one side and just opened it up a
So how
bit.
Did you temp them?
What?
How'd you
I just looked to see when the bacon was done, honestly. I mean, I could have stuck a thermometer in there, but they were in the 375 oven for about 45 minutes. I knew the pork
about
was
perfect.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was done.
And how about the pork chops themselves? Did they dry out at all? Or
no, not with that bacon on there and the spinach.
Filling inside.
And the filling inside.
Nice.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's like she's got them. It isn't often she says, I'd eat that again. You got to make that again.
So I think she says that all the time. I know how you cook.
But anyway.
Jop likes to Jop likes to fancy up his wife a little bit,
yeah.
And he spoils her.
Right. So coming up next, speaking of fancying up, we're going to be talking with Brian Lesperance at Fen Valley Winery. Tis the season for a big red wine or maybe a glass of port and a cigar. So stick with us. We will be back.